Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think many of my discussions this season are about reframing. Reframing how we think about art practice, how we think about exhibitions, how we think about relationships, and ultimately how we see and interact with our world. This is really true in my conversation with Roxana Marcoach, the photography curator from the Museum of Modern Art. Using some of her recent and upcoming shows as jump-off points, we explore everything from the ethical responsibility of curatorial practice to the evolving relationship between humans and technology. Roxana talks about who inspires her, how her approach is deeply guided by relationships and informed risk, and perhaps most pertinently, her rallying cry to all of us to be more bold in our artistic endeavors.
I think that trust is at the core of any relationship, and especially on the relationship with an artist. Then everything becomes possible. You can dream together wild dreams of possibility. You can just push the boundaries.
I'm Jen Fletcher, and you're listening to The Messy Truth, Conversations on Photography. Roxana Marcoach is the David Deckman Senior Curator and Acting Chief Curator of Photography at the Museum of Modern Art. Roxana has had an incredible career, publishing over 50 essays on modern and contemporary art, and curated numerous exhibitions with artists including Wolfgang Tillmans, Latoya Ruby Frazier, Anne Mai Lee, Carrie Mae Weems, and Taryn Simon. In 2010, she co-founded MoMA's Forums of Contemporary Photography, an experimental platform for free-form critical discussions about the perspectives and scope of image making amongst artists, curators, and cultural theorists. How do you as an individual get curious about things? Like, what drives your impulse to do the work you do?
Well, I think that being with art has, for as long as I can remember, my passion. It's always been there. And I'm very curious about uncharted pathways of exhibition making, of bringing changes of perspective to the specifics of experience outside what we already know, what I would call prevailing systems of knowledge. And many of the things that I get most curious about are those that, in fact, I have not previously studied in an academic context. You know, like all the things that come up in our day-to-day encounters with this reality, the 21st century reality. These are, you know, things that I've never, I studied African art in school, but I haven't really studied it necessarily from an African diasporic or Asian diasporic or queer or post-colonial or indigenous perspective. And so learning from these other perspectives, it's a process that engages the critical reappraisals of politics within what is asymmetrical systems of power. So I think that we are right now in a time when it is ever more critical to affirm equity and diversity of voices. And so I'm interested really to learn more about how have artists, and especially women artists, used photography and art in general as a progressive medium, sometimes as a tool of resistance, as a way of unsettling established narratives, as a means of unfixing the canon since they were not part of that canon initially, and as a possibility that is not overdetermined by colonial forms of representation. You know, every exhibition is a little bit different, but it always involves a very long track thinking process. And also numerous logistical decisions, you know, like very day-to-day, minute-to-minute decisions sometimes. It also involves an exchange of ideas with an artist, or depending if it's a, you know, a more thematic exhibition, it could be a group of artists, definitely with various colleagues in the cultural field. And in fact, not only cultural field. I would say sometimes it's scientific, sometimes it's sociological, but also an imagining or a visualization of what objects, performances, sounds, images signify when brought together, and how I, as a curator, am engaged in that process of signification, right? In putting forward meaningful interpretations of our position in the world. But it's always through this visual, experiential, sometimes hopefully revelatory format.
You touched then a little bit on the dialogue that you have with artists. I was curious, when and where does that dialogue begin? I know you're working on quite long-term projects, but I was curious how that relationship with an artist evolves through the manifestation of an exhibition.
I would say that most often the dialogue begins way before I think about and envisage doing an exhibition with an artist. And in fact, it can be years of dialogue in which I follow an artist's work. Maybe I acquire their work for the museum's collection. But I should say also that this is by no means a prerequisite, you know, for an exhibition. But I like to have this long-term relationship. I like to have some deep knowledge of an artist's practice, of how they think, of even their working methodology. There is a lot of study of all the exhibitions that they've done before, how they go about installation. Once I start working with an artist, say on a monographic show or a survey show, then the relationship, I would say, deepens dramatically. And probably I go further in understanding that artist's sensibility, their vulnerabilities, their strength, their perspectives. And I would say also that, like in any other rapport, the most important aspect is to establish bonding that is based on trust. I think that trust is at the core of any relationship, and especially on the relationship with an artist. And then everything becomes possible. You know, you can dream together wild dreams of possibility. You can just push the boundaries. And the other thing I would say also is that a relationship with an artist, or at least mine, with the people that I have worked with, does not stop with the conclusion of the show. So to me, it's kind of a enduring engagement with that person.
I'd love to talk a little bit about the sort of practical skills of curation, because I feel like, you know, it's shrouded in so much mystery to some degree. It's kind of become a very mainstream term, but I think so many people don't actually understand all the work that goes on behind the scenes. And I wondered if you could talk about, for you, what's the most invaluable skill required for a curator?
Right. I mean, it's interesting because I actually didn't study curatorial work. When I was in at the university, I was studying art history. There were no curatorial studies at that time. But I think that regardless of what you do, whether you are an academic or you are a curator, what really unites us all, and I would say that more than a skill, it's a desire, and the desire is to create a legacy for what is happening in the now, or how we interpret from a present position and reframe the past, how we generate new ideas and new scholarship. And for me, that involves a specific focus, actually, even though, you know, I'm a generalist and I engage with different aspects of modern and contemporary art, but I do have a focus on intersectional feminist histories of photography. I'm also very interested in connecting photography's first 180 years to contemporary ideas, to lens-based, time-based, to digital practices, to the impact of images in the age of smartphones, of artificial intelligence, social media platforms, basically to a larger visual culture that expands photography's ability to reveal things about the way that we interact with each other and understand the world around us. And I think that there is invaluable power inherent in looking at art and at the world, for that matter, because, you know, you are in a museum and then you step out. And I think that your experience of what you've seen in the museums, you carried out into the world. Yeah, so in looking at art in a new way, in looking at the world in a new way. And I would say that that is a sine qua non quality for a curator, the power of observation, the intelligence of reframing, and the ethical responsibility of reevaluation. You know, obviously there are a million logistical aspects about curation and what goes into an exhibition from the moment that you have an idea for a show and you begin conceptualizing it until you actually implement it and you install it. And that's a very long, you know, process.
A deserving answer, I think. I was curious how you think about audience and engagement. I know you're very passionate about what you do. And what are you thinking about in terms of creating an encounter for the visitor? And then, like, a bolt-on question is, are there any specific metrics that relate to this? Whether that, I guess in terms of metrics, I'm curious about your own personal metrics. I'm sure you have to carry metrics from the museum that you're accountable for, but I was just curious if you have metrics for success for a show.
Yeah, I'm sure there are metrics, and I know there are metrics within the museum about, you know, and actually even interviews with people who come to see an exhibition or who just wander through the collection. But what I should say that regarding audience and engagement, things have shifted a little bit in recent years because since 2020, like spring of 2020, with the advent of COVID-19, we began experiencing so much of culture in the form of digital culture. The pandemic crisis and our physically distant lives were for a while, like for a couple of years at least, enacted on Zoom, on social media platforms. And this mediated relation to the real eventually resulted in a very different type of viewing experience, a different type of audience. So people were looking at digital exhibition with high resolution renderings of artworks. They were attending virtual cultural events. We, as curators, were live streaming studio visits and even conversation with artists all around the globe. So a lot of those curatorial initiatives and audience reception kind of moved online between, I would say, 2020 and the beginning of 2023. It was even, it had a hashtag. It was Museum From Home hashtag. And now we are back in the world, right? We are back in our galleries, in the museum, but everything is much more hybrid than it ever used to be. And we offer local and global audiences access to what we do across both in situ and virtual platforms now. At MoMA, online viewing has far surpassed, by millions, the traffic within the institution's tangible walls. For me, if you ask me, being in the galleries of a museum like MoMA is truly an absolutely unparalleled experience, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
And what constitutes curatorial responsibility in the context in which you work?
Well, as I have been now kind of mentioning a few times, but I personally advocate for artistic diversity and equity and inclusion. And I think that as a curator, I have an ethical obligation to how I present the artworks. You know, it's not enough that you collect artworks. It's how do you really present them? What is their context? What are their personal stories and histories? And I like to think from different perspectives, not just from the standpoint of dominant Western-centric narratives. At MoMA, I have been part of a very important initiative, which is known as CMAP. CMAP is an acronym for Contemporary and Modern Art Perspectives in a Global World. And it convenes curator and various colleagues from library and from archives and publications, different parts of the museum, education, to think about various questions like how do we go about unsettling established art historical narratives and activate new readings and unfix the canon? How do we go about researching counter histories today? And how do we go by expressing transnational synchronicities and constructing resistance? Basically, how we are envisioning various oppositional practices from those that we have so far enacted. And I think that it's kind of important to investigate particular lacuna. Why do they subsist? to try sometimes even to critique from inside the institution in which we work. And I would say that envisioning this political extent, what is a political undercurrent also of our scholarly, you know, activities. And I think that all of these aspects translate in our continuous ability to respond. And this is what it is, it's response ability, it's responsibility, basically. And that's how I go about it.
What advice would you give to aspiring curators?
It's a very simple answer. I would say make lasting friendships with artists and don't be afraid to think large, to think creatively, to think outside of the box, because truly, as Oscar Wilde said, an idea that isn't dangerous isn't worthy of being called an idea at all. So that's what I would say. Just go boldly and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that you don't know how to do something. You know, all these aspects of know-how, they will come in no time. But thinking imaginatively, boldly, thinking along artists, that's the most important thing.
Let's talk a little bit about the shows that you've been working on and that you have upcoming. Your current show, which is a survey exhibition of Anne My Lee called Between Two Rivers. Could you tell us a little bit about that show's genesis and what sparked it and how your research evolved?
It's been such a gift. It's been truly an honor to work with Anne My for, I would say, the past 3 years, and to have had also, of course, when I say that I work part of a team. I work with a great colleague, Caitlin Ryan, who is an assistant curator in photography, and she's been working with me on this exhibition. There is Anne My's small but wonderful team at her studio. And then there are so many other talented colleagues across the museum in the various departments that we have to work with, right? From exhibition design to publications to marketing to communications, learning and engagement. I mean, it's just endless. It goes back to your previous question of what do you do when you put together an exhibition? You do many things. In fact, again, related to a previous question of yours on how to engage with an artist, what is the relationship? Where in the case of Anne My, her work was first presented at MoMA in 1997. In new photography, we were just talking about the importance of new photography for emerging artists. At that time, she was an emerging artist, and a former curator, Susan Kismarek, presented her work as part of new photography. My own first collaboration with Anne My goes back to 2010, when I included very early work from her series In Stone, which is from 92-93, in the exhibition, The Original Copy, Photography of Sculpture, 1839 to Today. And since then, I have been following Anne My's work. And in fact, the Department of Photography has acquired for the museum work from many of the series that she has made over the past 30 years. So, you know, I'm a huge admirer of her practice, of also herself as an artist, as a teacher. She teaches at Bard. And as a human being, you know, her stories, obviously, it's a very powerful story. As she left as a teenager Vietnam when she was airlifted by American forces just a few days before the fall of Saigon. And her story as a political refugee in 1975 kind of parallels a little bit my story, because I too was a political refugee as I left Romania, which was communist Romania, in the late 70s, and eventually was a political refugee in France and then first generation immigrants in the United States. But that's not why necessarily, you know, I did this exhibition. It's just that there are parallels that I discovered along the way. She is such an accomplished person. She started at Stanford and she got a master's in science in biology even before she came to the East Coast and to get her MFA in photography from Yale University. And immediately afterwards, she began making truly unforgettable photographs that address the complex fiction that inform how we justify, represent, and mythologize warfare and other forms of conflict. And to me, at a time when there is always more than one war being waged in the world, obviously this significance of photographs that critically engage with the meaning of rampage and dislocation feels so, so incredibly urgent. And also, you know, in the context here of the US of always heightened racial tensions, Amy's work invites us to think beyond insular ideas of nation state and national borders, and to reflect again on history, on the layering of different time periods, different geographies, different racial identities, and in fact, the intimacies that grow sometimes paradoxically out of conflict. Yeah, so this is kind of the show's genesis and my interest in her work.
And how did you approach making the show and offering a new way into her practice?
This exhibition is very different from any previous show that Anmi did. It is the first to engage with all the aspects of her work. She's known as a photographer. And if I ask somebody about, well, if they know about Anmi's work, maybe some will say, sure, we remember these beautiful black and white pictures. But in fact, she has been working both in color and black and white, both with still and moving images and with installation, framing the world through her lens, but also having the audacity to break at times the frame and to reimagine the world, not as static, not as, yes, not like being encapsulated within a frame, but rather as fluid, as borderless. So this exhibition includes all her major bodies of photographic work, but also her lesser known, yet equally consequential forays into film, sculpture, installation, and textiles. And in fact, in this show, we are world premiering her embroideries, which constitute a very powerful critical analysis of war and racialized sexual labor, exploitation. And also, we are premiering this stunning room-sized photographic cyclorama, which offers endless insight into the artist's consideration of the cinematic dimensions of photography and war, while also providing an imaginary space where disparate fluvial geographies, these kind of rivers in the title, and temporalities merge. The cyclorama is truly the anchor piece of the exhibition. It's never before seen, and now it's part of the museum's collection. So, yes, it's a very different show from any one that I had seen of hers. And she agrees with that.
And your next exhibition opening in May is a survey of Latoya Ruby Frazier's work called Monuments of Solidarity. Could you tell us a little bit about the show and your collaboration with Latoya? Because it sounds so fascinating in terms of her work being reimagined as this sequence of original installations.
That's, again, interesting to see the genealogy of an exhibition and of a relationship with an artist, you know. She's a perfect example because in 2015, I organized a forum on contemporary photography, on the relationship between photography and performance. It was in conjunction with two exhibitions that have happened, one titled Art on Camera, Photographs by Shank Kender, 1960-1971, which happened at MoMA, which it was about this series of performances on a pier during that period that were photographed by Shank Kender. And there were all male artists from Vito Acconci to, I don't know, Lawrence Wynn or something like that. And then Pier 54, which was organized by the High Line, Cecilia Alemani was the curator of that, which included just women doing performances on Pier 54. And within that show, there was also, Latoya did a performance, which was called A Human Right to Passage. Human Right to Passage is one of the pieces which will be included in the upcoming exhibition at MoMA. So you can see in 2015, I'm doing this forum on contemporary photography, inviting Latoya to speak about a work that is now part of this exhibition that is coming up. Among the speakers at that forum was also Liz Magic Laser, who was Latoya's collaborator on another body of work, and that's a performance from 2010-11, If Everybody's Work is Equally Important, which, as it happens, will also be included in the upcoming exhibition. That same year, the photography department acquired several of Latoya's works from the notion of family, which is the earliest body of work that she's made. She started it as a teenager, and which opens the forthcoming survey at MoMA. 4 years later, in 2019, I invited Latoya to participate in another forum on contemporary photography, which was titled Picture Industry, and which explored the links between photographic history, science, and the humanities as traced from the rise of industrialization to the present. And then finally, 3 years afterwards, in 2022, that was October 2022, the museum acquired The Last Cruise, a tour de force installation examining the closure of General Motors plant in Lordstown, Ohio, which will be another major piece in the show at MoMA, and which will be presented for the very first time in New York. And in November, so immediately afterwards of 2022, I co-organized a Scholars Day, which was centered on Latoya's practice. And thinkers from different disciplines gathered, both in person and virtually, to share their scholarship and be in dialogue with one another. And on that occasion, Latoya posed a question that always stayed with me afterwards. What if there were a monument to workers' thoughts? It was a provocation, but that provocation, along with the rich inquiry and discussion that it inspired, served as the foundation of Latoya Ruby Fraser Monuments of Solidarity, our exhibition, which in fact is conceived as a series of monuments for the working class, the stories, the communities, the labor of the working class. Yeah, so as I said, the making of an exhibition, as you can see here, is a path, is a process. It involves truly a long-standing relationship in some cases with an artist.
And how important is it for you to be pushing at the possibilities of a survey show? You know, how do you yourself push that vision forward?
I don't really think in terms of taxonomies. So a survey show to me is not an apotheotic show, right? It's not a culminating show. It's not to be the final, definitive show, which, you know, that idea of closure would scare completely an artist, you know, that what do they do next then, right? So it is more of an invitation to think large, to think experimentally. For me, it's a statement of positions, right? It's an inquiry into where do we go from here. So in that sense, it would be more of an opening for other creative propositions. And that's how I always think about, you know, a survey show.
I adore how you said that. I feel like that's so powerful and also so relevant to, even if you're not considering a survey show, but those moments of like plateau in a creative's practice, like that encouragement to think big. I think that's really powerful. I'm going to take that with me and like have that on the wall of my studio.
Yeah, totally. And the interesting thing is also that such exhibitions generate other ideas, you know. Mm-hmm. They are very generative for the artist who go on and do something else and something more than what is in this exhibition, which tries to be a cumulus, but it's, you know, it's just a jumping point.
This might be biased because I've been a long obsessive fan over Latoya's work, but I feel like she's such an important artist of our time. And I was curious what you are most looking forward to with the show opening.
Well, I'm very excited about this exhibition. And working with Latoya is such, you know, she's so smart. She's totally brilliant. And this show celebrates Black feminist world building, you know. It invites recognition of the crucial role that women and people of color have played and continue to play within histories of labor and the working class. And Latoya is inspiring because she sees her life's work as an archive of humanity. One, in fact, I would say that reasserts Black women's voices as key. So every single monument in the show is an intergenerational collaboration between Latoya and other creative women and workers, all of them, I think they are from blue-collar backgrounds. And this accords with a key element of Latoya's art and activism, you know, that this drive to imagine a mode of progressive living solidarity among those that have been affected, just as she has, by environmental racism, by industrialization and deindustrialization, by various healthcare disparities. She's so aware and present in how she can make change about violations of workers and human rights under global capitalism. So I think that this will be an exhibition in a way like no other, because it will engage a dialogue with American history, with international also, you know, women's and gender studies, with race and healthcare studies, with labor chronicles and social justice. So yes, she's an extremely important artist of our time.
You've worked on shows for years, collaborating closely with artists, immersing yourself in research, as we've been talking about. I'm really curious how you personally feel when a show closes. Is there a kind of mourning process for you when that energy, even though it continues, has this big moment and then it kind of calms down?
Actually, I would say that it's more of a celebratory salutation. It's, for me, the acknowledgement of a great achievement that I realized with an artist and with the whole team. And the other thing, okay, I'll share a secret with you. Once I finish installing an exhibition and both the artist and I are happy with everything, we had our opening, we had the party, and now, you know, I can finally go home, whatever, relax. Invariably, I do something else, and that is, and it usually happens right before falling asleep, but I like to play a little game and start the whole process all over again, specifically with the reinstallation. So I kind of like to reinstall in my mind the exhibition all over again in a completely different way. So, you know, when an exhibition closes, I'm just interested in kind of reimagining it, knowing that, like any work of consequence, an exhibition is open to endless exegesis. And therefore, you know, despite the closure, it will continue to live on.
I love that. You keep world building.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love the way you talk about it as a celebration. I think that's really powerful. But yeah, I love the idea of you continuing to world build just before you fall asleep. That's brilliant. So this is a big question, and I appreciate I should have been more focused, so apologies for that. But maybe you could refer to like one thing or a couple of things to answer this if helpful. But you've been at MoMA for over two decades now. I was curious how your process and thinking around exhibitions has evolved or changed.
Well, interestingly, I would say that perhaps the museum has caught up with my way of thinking from when I started two decades ago, because I have always fostered cross-departmental and interdisciplinarity and interdisciplinary dialogues in my exhibitions. So I've always been interested in porosity between mediums. I have worked in two curatorial departments at MoMA. I worked in painting and sculpture and in photography. In the past, the museum was more like a federation, with each curatorial department closed on itself, making its own decisions, thinking more along medium specificity. But now, you know, the collection galleries are presented across mediums in conversations that happen on a weekly basis between curators from different backgrounds, from different fields of specialization. And I would think, of course, the museum has changed and our relationship with artists have changed. You know, we are trying to make this totally a second home for artists, the museum, to support them in every possible way, to support their visions, the gift of their collaborations. But also, it's a double way, so I'm learning a lot. I'm learning from my colleagues. I learn every time I do an exhibition from the artists I'm collaborating with. And I would say truly that they are my mentors. They are my everlasting source of inspiration.
And I wanted to touch on the forums for contemporary photography because it's such an incredible resource. It's been so powerful for me personally. How did that start and what's your ambition for those forums?
Well, the forums, I co-founded them with my colleague Eva Respini at the time. That was the beginning of 2010, with the idea that we would bring together at the same table photographers and artists working with a photographic medium, alongside field-changing thinkers. So the forums had been always conceived from inception as an experimental platform for free-form critical discussions. They were very off the cuff in the beginning. They engaged debates about the perspectives and scope of still and moving images, and also other forms of image making among artists, curators, and theorists in the field. And I would say that the forums over these past 14 years now, they've been instrumental in addressing some of the most critical, some of the most pressing issues of our time, such as, for instance, photographic representation and colonial discourses. Even before truly these things were discussed, now they are so much more common. But how do we address underrepresented or erased histories? And, you know, featuring artists early on that were lesser, you know, like Native American artists and various other, not from the Western necessarily centric hemisphere. In conjunction with the centenary of the Bauhaus in 2019, we devoted a forum specifically to the ideas and critical contributions of women photographers at the Bauhaus. Again, a topic that was previously not addressed as much. And we had great presentations on the amazing work of Gertrude Arndt and Florence Henri, Lucia Moholy, Grete Stern, Marianne Brandt, among others. So the forums take different topics that are of significance to the present moment. They also are celebration of a particular individual. So in 21, we celebrated Tina Kamp's new book, A Black Gaze, Artists Changing How We See, which it's a book that addresses the ways in which contemporary artists shifted how we interact with visual culture by claiming discomfort, refusal, and the work also of caring, of feeling alongside one another. So my ambition for the forums is to basically invest in knowledge production and an understanding of a broader, more inclusive perception of modern and contemporary photographic histories, grounded in diverse perspectives, fostered by a spirit of shared conviviality and togetherness.
Yeah, that's so brilliant. I honestly thank you so much for those. I think there aren't that many opportunities, I think, once you've left education to have that kind of robust experience on a regular basis that is accessible anywhere in the world. And they're just so powerful. I find myself referring back to them all the time. Interesting that you mentioned the one with Tina, because that was one of my favorite ones.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Before we jump into some quickfire questions, I wanted just to ask you, thinking about where we stand in the industry right now, what are you most hopeful for?
The contemporary image world is composed increasingly of digital metadata, which is organized at such fast computational speeds by machine vision algorithms, by artificial intelligence. And this is something that I haven't even started to think about it properly, but it does pose this, where we stand right now, as your question is, I think that poses a whole new set of philosophical questions. And obviously for curators, but also for artists, for critics, for scholars, that we need to ponder. Many artists are currently making images to evaluate and deconstruct the systems of power, of unseen data, economic structures, the entrenched biases that shape the world, whether through computation or patterns of recognition, various other processes of global capitalism. And other artists seek to picture the world anew through historical reference, performativity, text-image relationship, media mixing. So when we talk about photography today, it's not longer merely kind of indexical representation of the world, 21st century images, I would say they construct new kinds of networks, new kinds of experiences. So understanding how photographic images function within ever-evolving human and machine relationships to space and time, and therefore to new forms of thought, art, and agency is absolutely key to imagining also more equitable, mutually constitutive, or even sustainable futures. So that's what I'm most hopeful about, of how we use this data to make it our common future sustainable.
Are you ready for some quickfire questions?
Totally.
Okay. How do you deal with self-doubt?
Well, I like to bounce ideas with the people I trust, cross-generationally, but I don't hesitate in my decisions. And I like taking informed risks.
I knew you were going to have a brilliant answer to that question. I just knew it, and it did not disappoint. How has success changed your work?
So I'm not sure if success really changes one's work, but I always try to push boundaries. I like to think thrivingly, like nothing could stop me. And I like working hard and celebrating together with my team.
And what does your practice of curating and writing enable you to do?
In short, I would say that it enables me to be a voice in the formative culture of our time.
And is there anything you're currently unlearning?
Oh, yeah, every day. Unlearning, I think, is an active process of investigation. As I mentioned before, the revision of biased histories, a reclamation of colonial narratives is totally a reminder that history needs to be unlearned and explored from a position in the present.
And do you think photographs still have the power to shift thinking or consciousness?
Yes, undoubtedly. You know, I don't know if this is a quick fire response necessarily, but, you know, if you think back to the 19th century, you know, I cannot not think, because we are doing something now, but with Frederick Douglass, the great African-American social reformer and abolitionist, and how he recognized the power of pictures right then. You know, photography's profound potential, you know, to uproot racism. It was so clear to him. And there is this great speech from 1865, which is called Pictures and Progress, that he delivered just as the American Civil War was coming to an end. And he said that pictures, which are a form through which humanity externalizes its thoughts and experiences, have the power to undermine racist authority and offset stereotypical portrayals of African Americans. So in that sense, poets, prophets, and reformers are all picture makers. And, you know, there are so many other examples I could give along the way, like when Laszlo Moholy Nagy in the 20s foresaw photography as the art form of the future by saying, you know, that it is not the person ignorant of writing, but the one ignorant of photography who will be the illiterate of the future. So I would say that today we cannot envisage the future without image futurity.
And to finish up, I wanted to ask you the question that I ask everybody at the end of the show, and that's, what matters more to you, the process of making the work or the final exhibition?
Both, because they are intrinsically interlinked. They are almost part of the same fabric, and I would not even know how to separate one from the other.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Roxana. It was such a joy to have you.
It was a greatest pleasure to be with you, Jen. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to The Messy Truth. You can find more information about today's guests in the show notes. Theme music is Change by Judd Greenstein from the album Awake, and design is by Ruby White. You can follow updates on the podcast on my Instagram at Jen Fletcher, or subscribe to my newsletter at jenfletcher.com. Feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts.